Mike stood up and patted it. Blow shit up, of course. We're taking this back to Eustace, so we have a way to deal with armor like we encountered last time, Sarge added. Don't let them fool you, Morgan, Ted said. That thing is a huge piece of shit. I hate him. Mike climbed up on the machine and patted the cannon. Don't worry, sweetheart. I won't let the bad man hurt you. Look at the size of that damn cannon, I muttered. Oh, yeah, Mike shouted. This is a 105-millimeter rifled gun, and we've got a load of ammo for it. That's all fine and dandy, Ted said, until that shitty autoloader goes down and we have to climb out on top of it to fix it. Irene will not let us down, Mike shouted back. Come on, Morgan. Let's leave these idiots so they can jerk off in private, Sarge said, as he got in the Hummer. How the hell are we getting that thing back? I asked. Sarge hit the starter and replied, Drive it, of course. Do we have enough people? We're leaving the MRAP. We need something to deal effectively with the threat of armor. This is as good as it gets. I looked over my shoulder at the hulking war machine as we pulled away and asked, Can it do it? I mean, it's not a tank. No, it's not a tank. But that gun is a tank gun. It can knock tanks out. It just can't take return fire very well. But we ain't seen no tanks. Just armored personnel carriers. And it can knock the dog shit out of those. We made our way through the base until we came to a fenced area. The gate was open, and we drove in. A tractor hooked to a large tank trailer occupied most of the area beside a metal building.
There she is, Sarge said, as he shut the truck down.
Pointing at it, I asked, That? You want me to drive that?
Yeah, what's the problem?
I asked, Is that thing full of fuel? He nodded.
You want me to drive that rolling inferno all the way back to Eustace?
Yeah, we need the fuel. There isn't anything out there to worry about.
What if some asshole takes a shot at it? I don't want to be burned up in that thing.
Sarge shook his head.
A rifle isn't going to hurt it. It'd take something like an RPG, and we aren't going to encounter any of those.
I shook my head.
This is bullshit.
Sarge's face contorted.
Would you quit your belly aching? You're driving it. End of story. And pull your fucking skirt down. Your mangina is showing.
He walked away shaking his head and mumbling to himself and went into the building. I stood there for a minute, thinking of all the ways this could end badly. Seeing that there was no choice in the matter, I followed him inside. The building was brightly lit and much larger than I first thought. Various trucks and fighting vehicles were being worked on by several crews. Things must be pretty intense for them to be working around the clock. Sarge was talking to a large man whose arms stretched the sleeves of his uniform. There was something familiar about him, so I walked over.
Hey, Fagione, I said.
He smiled, causing the large cigar in his mouth to turn up.
Hi there, Morg. I see you're still running with this band of merry misfits.
Window-licking retards, I replied, looking at Sarge.
Glad to see you're all right.
When I saw what happened in Tampa, I was worried about you.
He pulled a lighter from a pocket and lit the stogie, taking a long pull on it.
We're all right, he replied,
as smoke wafted out of his mouth.
We moved back here long before that mess. I see you found a new line on cigars.
He held it out.
Bouncing his eyebrows, he replied, Finest Cuban leaf. Having those little bastards here isn't all bad.
I smiled knowingly.
Ah, war trophies?
He smiled again as he tucked it back in the corner of his mouth.
Something like that.
He pointed at Sarge and said,
Top tells me you're going to drive my truck home.
Looks that way, I replied.
You still got my babies?
I nodded, and he asked,
You taking care of them?
They're doing fine, but we could use some tires and oil filters, that kind of stuff. Fagio nodded and pointed with the wet, chewed end of the cigar. Artie and your truck out there. Hope you weren't planning on having any passengers. I looked at Sarge and asked, I don't know, was I? The old man shook his head. Nope, you're riding alone. If that thing gets hit, I don't want to lose more than one person.
You're a dick, I replied.
Don't let him get a rise out of you, Morg. You'll be fine. We've done a lot of recon, and there isn't anything that can ruin your day between here and Eustace. Now, south of you, that's a different story. He smiled and looked at Sarge. But we'll be dealing with that shortly. He struck the lighter again and took another puff. I thought you didn't smoke those things, just chewed on them, I said. He took the roll of tobacco from his lips and spat a small piece that remained behind. Usually not, but current conditions dictate I have a drag from time to time. I shook his hand. It's good to see you again, my friend. Reaching into his blouse pocket, he removed several cigars and handed them to me. For your ride home. It's against regs to smoke in the truck, he smiled. But you're not exactly in the army, now are you? I took the proffered Havanas and smiled. Thanks, man. These will be a nice distraction. He then handed me a Bic lighter. Pocketing it, I said, This will help, and I shook his hand again. Take care of my truck. I'd like to see it again someday. I'll treat it as if it were my own, I replied. Sarge snorted.
Tony, if you saw his truck, that wouldn't mean shit to you.
Not my fault the damn thing is a bullet magnet. Fagione laughed. Seems to be a lot of that these days.
Enough of this bunkum. We need to get ready to hit the road, Sarge said.
Then, in an exaggerated manner, he asked,
You do want to get home, don't you?
Yeah, I said dismissively, and looked at Tony. Thanks again. Take care of yourself.
I'm safe as being in my mama's arms. You guys take care of yourselves. I hear it's pretty tough out there in the wilderness.
Sarge turned and headed for the door.
Nothing we can't handle. See you next time, Tony.
I cocked my head to the side and looked at Tony. You know, that's funny. What's that? He asked.
That's the second time today someone referred to the wilderness.
Fawcett said it too. Tony worked the cigar to the other side of his mouth.
That's what we call it now. Anything outside the wire is the wilderness, full of Indians, bandits, settlers, and other trials. It's like being back 200 years. You take care of yourself out there in that wilderness.
I followed Sarge back to the warehouse as I thought about what Tony said.
The wilderness.
I guess it did fit. Life was certainly a lot harder now. Maybe not as bad as trying to hack it from the wilderness, but a damn close second. The truck was heavy and slow. It would be hard to react to anything in this barge. But having thousands of gallons of diesel would be incredible, so I sucked it up. At the warehouse, the truck was sitting beside the Striker, with the trailer now reconnected. The rain had abated a bit, and everyone was standing around. I parked the truck and got out. Sarge walked up and looked at his watch.
It's nearly 2:30. Everyone find some place to grab a couple hours of sleep. We're going to leave at 6. Jamie, you and Ian will be in the 5-ton.
He then looked at Ted.
You take those two misfits in the Striker. Dalton, you're with me in the Hummer.
Dalton nodded.
I can drive.
Only thing you're driving is that Browning up there. I'm driving. And Morgan will be in the fuel truck. I'll be at the head of the column, and Ted, you're at the rear. Any questions?
There were none, and we all broke up to find some place for a quick nap. I went to the truck. It wasn't particularly comfortable, but it was dry as the rain picked back up. I lay in the truck listening to the pattering of rain. It was funny that this thing smelled like every other military rig I'd ever been in. They seemed to be issued with a particular odor.
not necessarily offensive or pleasant, just present in intense form. Eventually, I drifted off to sleep. Chapter 5. Thad came into the kitchen with a laundry basket full of tomatoes and set it on the counter, announcing,
"Here's another basket."
"We'll get them washed. Thank you, Thad," Kay replied. He went out the back door onto the porch. Mel, Bobby, Jess, and Mary were there tending two kettles, sitting on a large two-burner propane camp stove. The top of the picnic table was covered in steaming jars. Thad paused and listened as some of the cooling jars made the telltale tick as the lid sealed. He smiled.
"That sure does look good."
Mel lifted a large strainer from one of the rolling pots, holding it to allow water to drain. "It's hard work, but it'll be worth it," she replied, as she carried the scalded tomatoes over to another table where Mary sat working a manual food processor to separate skin and seed. Thad stepped over to her and wrapped his arms around her from behind. She smiled and looked up at him.
"You got a pile of seeds there.
We'll have plenty of tomatoes next year," he said.
"We have a lot this year," she replied, as she dropped more fruit into the hopper. "Remember, you have to let those seeds ferment. Squeeze a couple of tomatoes into the bowl. They need the fruit to mature."
Mary stopped turning the handle and spun around to face Thad. She stepped on her toes and kissed him on the cheek.
"I know."
Then she turned him towards the door and said, "Now get. We've got work to do, and so do you. Danny is out there waiting on you." She pointed to the garden, where Danny was busy picking. He and Thad had put up a large canopy, one of the types you see at the beach that deploys quickly. It allowed them to work in the rain without getting soaked. It was time to harvest the garden, and they weren't about to lose anything if they could prevent it. Thad smiled and replied,
"Yes, ma'am,"
and headed for the door with an empty basket. "We're going to be eating squash till we're sick of seeing them," Danny said. Thad went to the next row of tomato plants and started picking.
"That's a good problem to have. Too much to eat."
"I wonder if Morgan will get anything from his list," Danny said, as he piled more squash into a milk crate.
"He had a heck of a list," Thad replied.
"I bet they don't give us anything."
"Why would you say that? They've helped us before."
"I guess you're right. I'm just setting myself up for disappointment. That way, when he comes back with some supplies, I'll be really happy." Danny paused and looked over at the pond where the kids were fishing. Miss Kay told them if they caught any fish, she would cook them for their lunch. So they were giving it their best.
"I'm just worried about the kids."
Thad straightened himself and looked towards the pond.
"We're doing all right, Danny. I think we're actually doing pretty good. Compared to most folks, we're living in the lap of luxury."
As Thad spoke, Leanne walked up. She waited for him to finish and asked,
"Is there anything ready to go up to the house?"
Danny slid the now full milk crate out to her.
"Here, you can take this."
She picked it up and said, "Kay says not to pick any more today. She said we have all we can do today, and it's better to leave it on the plants than to pick it."
"She's right. We'll get back to it when they get caught up," Thad said, as he picked up the laundry basket.
Carrying it under one arm, he put his other arm around the girl.
"How you doing?"
"I'm good," she replied as they walked.
She looked up into the dreary sky.
"It's just kind of depressing out."
Thad pulled her in closer.
"It's just rain, and we need it. It's a good thing. At least it ain't hot," he laughed.
Leanne smiled. "I guess that's true. It's kind of nice out when you think about it like that." They went up onto the porch and deposited their loads on the table. Danny went out to the pond and called the kids to the house. They came running back, looking comical in their makeshift rain ponchos of cut plastic sheeting.
They laughed and jostled one another as they ran. When they came up onto the porch, stomping, laughing, and making a ruckus, Bobby told them to take off their wet stuff before they went inside. Taylor was busy cutting squash and putting it into jars. She would fill a jar and place it on the table in front of Mel. Mel would then dip a measuring cup into a pot of boiling water and pour it into the jar. Then she'd place the lid and ring on top of the jar and give it a gentle shake to remove air bubbles. Once it was sealed, she would pass it to Bobby, who was standing in front of the canner. She had a small wind-up timer and was monitoring the cook time of the water bath canner. It was a smooth process and efficient. As a result, there was a huge amount of vegetables being put away. The dining table, kitchen counter, and nearly every other surface were covered with jars. When Danny came up onto the porch, Bobby looked at him.
"We need to find a way to store all this."
"I'll figure something out," he replied.
"Why don't we just distribute it out between all the houses? It'll take care of the issue of space, as well as not keeping all our eggs in one basket," Thad said.
"That's a good idea," Danny replied.
"We'll know where it is and can always bring it back." "I'll make a list of what goes where. I already have an inventory going," Kay said. She had a penchant for organization.
"I'll still build us some shelves here," Danny said.
"You want to go to the hardware store?" Thad asked.
Danny nodded, and Thad said,
"Let's take the little red truck. It's out front."
The hardware store was actually a shop behind one of the houses. It was the home of an older man who was found having shot himself in his recliner in the living room. That very pistol was now tucked into Jess's belt, where she sat cutting zucchini. While the house wasn't fit to go into, the shop was a veritable treasure chest of useful and hard-to-find materials. From fasteners to assorted lumber, the shop was a constant source of supply. The wipers bumped back and forth in a pathetic attempt at keeping the windshield clear of water. The little truck splashed through the water, flowing down the center of the road. Since traffic was now so limited, the frequent summer rains had washed it out considerably. Thad did his best with the tractor to maintain it, but it was still a rough ride. The truck bounced in a particularly large rut. Thad said,
"Soon as this rain stops, I got to get out here and do something about this road."
Danny was clinging to the "oh shit" handle and agreed with him.
"Good idea, I think. This is getting ridiculous."
When they got to the paved portion, the ride smoothed out. But they had to make an immediate turn into the driveway of the hardware store. Thad pulled to a stop in front of the large, roll-up door.
"What are you thinking of for shelves?"
Pulling the hood of his raincoat over his head, Danny replied,
"I don't know. Let's go see what's in there."
Inside the shop was a dry refuge from the unceasing rain outside. Shaking off the water, Danny took his coat off and laid it over the workbench. Thad hadn't bothered to put one on and was just dealing with the wet. It was dark inside, despite the large door being open, and both men put on headlamps.
"Let's check out the lumber," Danny said, as he moved towards the back of the shop.
"Why don't we just take these?" Thad asked,
pointing at a couple of the black plastic shelving units that can be had from any hardware or big box store. Danny shook his head.
"I hate those things.
They'll bow with any weight on them, and with the number of jars we'll be piling on them, they would certainly sag." Thad nodded in agreement.
"But those," Danny said, as he pointed at another set of shelves that were more industrial-looking,
like pallet racking from a warehouse, only smaller scale.
"Those are perfect."
Thad ran his hand over the plywood shelf.
"Someone put some good wood on these. They'll hold some weight.
Let's clean these off and take them." They worked together to move the material from the shelves they wanted to other available space. Thad was simply moving things in as efficient a manner as possible and piling them on whatever surface was available. But that didn't sit well with Danny's OCD tendencies.
he started rearranging the material, sorting it according to type and size wherever possible. Thad looked at him and laughed, asking,
"What are you doing?"
"Just organizing it. That way, if we need to find it later, we can."
"We know where to find it. In this here building. It ain't going nowhere."
Danny picked up a couple peanut butter jars full of screws and replied, "I'm a little more organized than that." Thad nodded.
"Oh, yeah. I think I remember Morgan saying something about you having OCD or something."
Danny laughed.
"It ain't quite that bad. But you could say I'm the polar opposite of him. His idea of organization is throwing shit in a corner."
Thad laughed, covering his mouth.
"You're right about that. He seems to do a lot by the seat of his pants." "You got that right."
Thad picked up a box full of metal framing straps and asked,
"Where do you want these?"
They got everything moved and disassembled the shelves they were going to use and carried them out to the truck. It was still raining, and they decided to hang out in the open door for a minute. Thad stretched and wandered back into the bowels of the building, which had not been thoroughly searched yet. Danny could hear him shuffling around as he looked up into the desolate sky and asked,
"What are you doing back there?"
"I found something. Come help me," Thad replied.
Danny made his way back through the rows of shelves and found Thad stacking boxes of jars.
"Look at all these," he said,
as he added another flat to the pile that was already 4 feet tall.
"Holy crap! See any lids?" Danny asked.
"There's all kinds of stuff here," Thad replied,
as he slid a large box full of lids out. Picking one up, he inspected it.
"These are Tadler reusable lids. This is a gold mine."
"I'll start loading it," Danny replied, as he hefted the top 3 flats and headed for the truck. They loaded all the canning supplies and got back in for the short ride home. As Thad pulled out onto the road, Danny said, "Be careful, or we'll have a bed full of broken glass."
"Ain't that the truth?" Thad grunted.
Then said, "Hey, did I tell you I found a greenhouse?" Danny shook his head.
"No. It's a little rough. Ain't been used in a long time. You care if I disassemble it and bring it to your place and set it up?"
"Not at all. I'll help you.
That would be great to keep the garden going. And for starting seed. That's where it'll be really good."
Thad backed the little truck up to the back porch to make unloading easier. Eric and Fred were sitting in rockers, staying out of the rain, and they came over to help. They made a chain of sorts, passing items to the two of them.
"Look at all these jars," Fred shouted.
"Yeah,
you just made Miss K's day," Eric added.
"Now we ain't got to use all them peanut butter jars and other weird ones we found," Thad replied.
Taking the last case from Thad, Fred replied,
"Yeah, she didn't know how she was going to get them to seal."
Eric had a stack of jars in his arms and said,
"Come on, babe, let's take these in and surprise her."
He pushed the door open with his foot and stepped in, shouting,
"Miss K, we brought you something."
Kay was at the sink and turned around, wiping her hands on an apron Jess had found in another house during the wedding dress search.
"What is it?"
she instinctively asked, before seeing the cases of jars Eric and Fred were carrying.
"Wherever did you find those?"
she shouted, as she started towards them.
"I don't know,"
Eric replied, as he deposited his load onto the island. "Thad and Danny found them somewhere." As he said that, Thad stood in the open door, wiping his wet feet on the rug. Hearing Kay, he looked up and smiled, saying,
"I thought you would like these."
Kay picked up one of the jars and inspected it.
"Where did you find them? We searched all the houses."
Thad shrugged and replied,
"At the hardware store,"
as though it were as normal to say today as it once had been. Kay looked up.
"The what?"
Bobby came in from the back porch with a large pot swinging from one hand. We need more water for the canner, she said. Then she saw Danny coming through the door with another stack of jars in his arms.
What in the world? She asked.
Wait till you see what Danny has, Thad replied.
Danny slid the two cases of jars and the box sitting on top of them onto the counter. Thad took the box and opened it. Reaching in, he took out one of the Tattler lids and handed it to Kay. Her eyes immediately lit up.
Reusable lids! She shouted.
Thad pulled back one of the flaps and looked down into the box.
A whole bunch of them, too.
Kay pulled the box over and looked down into it. Her excitement grew even more, and she hugged Thad.
I don't care where you found them. This is amazing. We've been trying to reuse lids, and so many of them have failed to seal. This will really save us.
Bobby set her pot down and patted Danny on the ass.
Good job, babe. Where did you guys find them?
At the hardware store, he replied, which naturally made Thad laugh as he shouted, That's what I said.
Picking up a case of jars, Kay said, Well, I don't care where you found them. I'm just glad you did. Bobby gave Danny a sideways look. What do you mean, hardware store? He leaned in and kissed her quickly before replying,
Just that, the hardware store.
Bobby wasn't buying it, though.
Hardware store my ass.
Don't look, give jars in the mouth, Kay shouted from the sink. Jess and Mary walked in from the back porch. Though it was very overcast and relatively cool, Jess's forehead was beaded with sweat, and her hair clung to it. Brushing it away with the back of her hand, she said, Kay, these jars aren't sealing. She shook her head and looked at the ceiling in exasperation. We're going to lose so much.
Where did all these come from?
Mary asked, a smile beaming across her face. Kay smiled and nodded her head at Thad.
Your man there found them.
Mary looked at him and gave him a timid smile.
You found all this? We looked in all the houses and didn't find them.
Thad jabbed a thumb over his shoulder.
Me and Danny found them. They weren't in a house, though.
Mary stepped over to him and raised herself up on her tiptoes and kissed him on the cheek. Thad's face flushed as he was still getting used to the public affection. Not that it was much of a secret to anyone. And to Thad's relief, the small act went unnoticed, or at least there were no comments. Jess lifted a case of quart jars up, saying, I'm getting these into some boiling water now. And she disappeared out the back door.
I'll help,
Mary called after her, grabbing another case as she followed. I was startled awake by banging on the door of the truck. Sitting up, I rubbed my eyes and cracked the door open.
What?
Mike was standing on the step up to the cab. He had a pile of something in his hands and asked,
What size pants do you wear?
Still trying to come to my senses, I blinked and asked,
What?
What size pants?
Fumbling for the answer, I mumbled, 38, maybe? Hell, I don't know. Mike picked through the pile of pants draped over his arm and pulled two pair out and handed them to me.
Here, these'll fit you.
I took the multicam pants and said,
Thanks. Where the hell did you find these?
Mike bounced his eyebrows and replied,
While you were sleeping, me and Ted were out getting our scrounge on. The old man said we were getting ready to pull out, but we're going to have to take another route home. All this rain has caused the Santa Fe River to overflow onto I-75. We're going to have to go around it.
Sitting up and stretching as best I could in the cab, I replied,
Great. Let's just drag this shit out for days.
Oh, come on, Morg. It won't be that bad. Little sightseeing.
He stepped down and I pushed the door open.
I've seen those sights before and don't really care to see them again. I'm going to go get a cup of coffee before we leave.
Better hurry.
His royal pain in the ass is already starting to bitch.
Let him, I replied.
Mike headed for the striker to hide his loot, and I had a second thought about the coffee. Reaching into my pack, I took out my stainless water bottle. There was still water in it, and I poured it into one of the platypus water bags and took the bottle inside with me. The coffee pot was a large affair, as would be expected in such a place. I put the bottle under it and opened the tap. As the brown liquid flowed in, I held a can of sugar and a can of powdered creamer in either hand, shaking their contents into the bottle as well. When the bottle was full, I wrapped my bandana around it and shook it to mix well. Removing a styrofoam cup from its plastic sleeve, I made a cup for the road and headed back to the truck. Everyone was milling about around the trucks as rain gently but steadily fell from the sky. I found the old man and asked, "So which route are we going to take home?" He was shining a red flashlight at a map inside a plastic case.
"I figured we'd take 19. Be the easiest route."
"That's going to take us through a lot of populated areas." He tossed the map into the front seat of the Hummer and replied,
"They're not as populated as they once were."
I grunted, "I guess not." I looked up into the spitting sky and said, "Maybe the rain will keep the Indians at bay. I'll be in the truck," as raindrops pelted me. Sarge cupped a hand to his mouth and shouted,
"Let's saddle up!"
As we were moving towards our vehicles, a Hummer came racing up and skidded to a stop. Several men climbed out and looked us over. When they didn't say anything, Sarge asked,
"Can I help you boys?"
"We heard you might be the folks that stirred a little shit up over in Crystal River."
Sarge nodded.
"Maybe just a little."
The man looked back at those with him and replied, "We're with the 14th Brigade Engineers. We were there when the Russians showed up." Sarge nodded.
"Gong Mu Ro."
The man nodded with a smile and replied,
"Rugged. It's not often someone knows our motto."
Sarge pointed at Mike and Ted and said,
"Me and these boys did some work with your people in Afghanistan back in 11.
"They were the guys doing all the route clearance," Mike offered.
The engineer held his hand out.
"We just wanted to thank you guys. Name's Arnold."
Sarge shook the man's hand and replied,
"I don't know why. We could see you guys there, but there wasn't anything we could do for you with the number of Ruskies. We just had to leave you fellers."
Another one of the engineers stepped up and asked,
"What the hell did you guys do to that boat?"
Sarge jabbed a thumb at Mike.
"Well, this one here,"
then he pointed at Dalton,
"and Gulliver there swam out to the boat and planted a pile of C4 on the shafts."
The engineers laughed.
"Yeah," one of them replied. "That really pissed the Russians off. They were caught completely off guard."
"They expected an attack from the air," another said. "Had all kinds of man pads ready to shoot down aircraft," he laughed. "But when that boat erupted and sank, they shit themselves."
"What the hell do they want with that spent fuel anyway?" Ted asked.
"We don't know," Arnold replied.
"They were really tight-lipped about it around us. I have to say, though, they were decent guys. We had some wounded in their raid, and they treated them like their own. Their medics were top-notch." "We watched you boys from the top of that coal elevator," Dalton said.
He pointed to one of the men and said,
"I remember you. Watched you while one of their medics bandaged you up."
The man worked his arm.
"It's still a little sore, but I still have it." "Once they realized what had happened, they figured you guys were up there," Arnold said.
"They sent a team up there and found your hide, followed your tracks to the water and out,
even back to where you exfilled to your truck."
The man with the injured shoulder said,
"Yeah, the boat really torqued their ass, but whoever was on the trigger of that rifle up there, that really pissed them off."
Dalton nodded.
"I'm sure it did. I went for the most important-looking ones."
"You got him. You took out some scientist of theirs. He was the guy everyone looked to on the movement of the fuel rods. Apparently, their number one job was to protect his ass. They had no idea there would be an attack like that."
"Yeah," Arnold added.
They really wanted your ass. Better than they have tried and failed, Dalton said.
How did you guys get out? Ted asked.
Arnold took a deep breath. Well, once the boat was gone, there was nothing else for them to do. Then they got word there was a force moving our direction, and they decided to unass the AO.
They just left you there? Mike asked.
Arnold nodded.
Yeah. They didn't have the time or resources to deal with us.
Not to mention they didn't want to fight,
another of the engineers added.
How did they get out? Sarge asked.
Boat, Arnold answered. They had other boats.
Just not the one they really wanted, Mike said with a smile.
Arnold smiled and shook his head.
Nope, they damn sure didn't have that one.
I'd still like to know what they wanted that spent fuel for, Doc said. But I was happy to see they took care of you guys.
Sarge patted Doc on the back.
Yeah. Doc here wanted to go over and help you guys. Thought I was going to have to tie his ass up.
Sarge held his hand out to Arnold.
I'm glad to see you boys are all right and made it out of there. We were worried about you.
Arnold shook his hand. We appreciate the fact someone knew we were there.
We didn't know what was going to happen, and we were really worried. When your fireworks show started, we knew it wouldn't be long.
I stayed out of the way during their talk, just listening. This was a time for fellow men-at-arms to talk. I didn't need to be sticking my nose into it. I occupied myself with my coffee. Then, remembering Tony had given me some cigars, I took one out and ran it under my nose. The tobacco had a spicy aroma, and I decided, what the hell? A cigar before the sun came up seemed like a good idea. After cutting the cigar, I rolled it between my thumb and forefinger while holding the lighter to it. Once it was warmed up, I puffed it to life. The tobacco was intense and aromatic. Maybe a bit heavy of a smoke for this early in the morning. But it was a new world we now lived in, and I enjoyed it nonetheless. I sipped my coffee and enjoyed the smoke while the conversation continued. I was eager to get on the road. But I also knew I wouldn't interrupt them. Once their conversation wrapped up, we'd leave, and 15 minutes either direction wouldn't much matter. Instead, I thought about our route home. It would take us through the very path I walked, or much of it anyway. As the smoke drifted up before my eyes, I thought back to the car on the side of the interstate, seeing it only hours ago, something I never thought I would ever do. Brought that day back to me, vividly. I could remember walking up and looking over the rise and seeing nothing moving. I remember sleeping in the car and waking to fogged up windows in the cold. I remembered those kids walking down the side of the road, cold and shivering. The girl in nothing more than flip-flops, and the kid in a t-shirt, his arms hugged tight to his side against the biting cold that morning. It was a surreal scene to remember, like something out of a Hollywood production. The cold, the heavy wet fog, the silence. Silence like I'd never experienced before. I could see how someone could go catatonic from the shock when you consider the noisy overload our senses were subjected to in our daily lives. I was brought back to the present by Sarge snapping his fingers in my face.
What the hell are you thinking about? I was talking to you, and you acted as though you didn't even hear me.
I shook it off.
Oh, yeah, I didn't. I was just thinking about the day all this started. Seeing my car out on the side of the interstate just kind of brought it back.
Sarge nodded.
Would be kind of odd, seeing it after all that time. We need to get on the road now, though.
I puffed the roll of tobacco that was threatening to expire back to life.
It was. It's funny, you know. When I think back to that time and compare it to where we are today, it just doesn't seem like we've gone all that far.
Sarge leaned back against the fuel tank of the truck and folded his arms over his chest.
Oh, we've gone a long way, Morgan. Mainly backwards,
but we've gone a long way.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But at least we're all still here. I paused and looked at him. Can you imagine how many starved to death or were killed in any thousands of ways? He stood up and patted my shoulder.
I can, but let's not dwell on that. It's time to get on the road, old buddy.
As he turned to walk away, I said, I'm ready to get back home. Turning his head to the side, he said, I put a couple of MREs in the front seat of your truck. We'll eat on the road. It was still dark when we rolled out the gates at the base. The roads were deserted, and we were the only thing moving. It offered both comfort and concern. Comfort in that no one was out. Concern in that we were the only thing moving. But I was certain the presence of that striker would prevent any of the locals from even thinking of messing with us. It was the thought of encountering other armor I was worried about. We started out the way we had come, going through Tallahassee as the sun began to rise, the only indication being the black morphing into gray. I was still nursing the cigar along, intent on smoking it as far down as possible. Between it and the caffeine from the coffee, I was sporting a healthy buzz. Probably not the best idea considering I was dragging several thousand gallons of diesel around behind me. I watched the side of the interstate, waiting for the car to come into view again. It didn't take long for it to begin to appear, a vague apparition that slowly took on its true form. I thought I'd have a hard time picking it out amongst all the other cars. But as soon as I saw it, I knew. I slowed the truck a bit to get a better look. The doors were open, and it was covered in dust and grime, impossible to see into the windows. But as it slowly passed, I could see in the open driver's door for an instant. There was nothing to see, other than a memory of a day long ago. A thin smile cut my lips as Sarge's Hummer veered onto the same off-ramp I had walked down. When the litter-strewn parking lot of the truck stop came into view, I saw the low boy tractor sitting and wondered if the old boy ever made it back. The store had been abandoned for a long time, although it looked as if it had had plenty of visitors. How many people had wandered into it to pick over the leavings of the countless folks before them? It was like watching a film of my past as we turned onto Perry Highway. It wasn't long before I could see an intersection coming up that I couldn't forget. As we passed the run-down store, I could still see the old men playing dominoes and the kids running around. There was nobody lying there, not that I expected to see one. I'm sure someone loved Gold Dollar and came to collect him. That made me think about the entire ordeal. I killed a man and never heard another word about it. But then, he was only the first. There have been many others since. It was a disturbing thought. This trip was odd, like Scrooge being guided by the ghosts through Christmas past. I, too, was touring memories from the beginning of our apocalypse. While things looked so much the same, they also looked different. The steady, indifferent march of time and nature applied layer after layer of crap, crud, and corrosion upon the memories until one day they would no longer resemble what they had been on that day. Vacant were the places, giving no indication of the people and the interactions between them. Some life and death. Nothing would remain. Eventually, even their memories would be consumed by the steady progression of time. I was refilling my cup with cold coffee when we passed a store that was like every other one we'd passed. The parking lot was filled with wind-blown trash, but this one had a memory attached to it. The memory of an old pickup and a fat sow in the bed. That meant James and Edith's place was coming up. It brought up several emotions at the same time. Happiness at the thought of the old couple, and sadness about what could have happened to them. I decided to find the answer to that question. Picking up my radio, I said, I need a piss break. Let's stop at this little house up here.
Sarge's Hummer, slowing to a stop, told me he agreed. I left the truck idling in the road, afraid to shut it down in case it might not restart. An irrational sort of fear that took on a deeper meaning in today's world. Taking my rifle, I got out and started towards the house.
"Where are you going?" Dalton asked. "You look like a man on a mission."
I nodded at the house.
"I know the people that live here," I replied.
Dalton looked at the place, then back at me. I took another look and corrected myself. "That used to live here. I just want to check on them."
Dalton walked with me and asked,
"You come through here in your walk home?"
"Yeah. I stayed a couple of days at them. They were really nice folks. Reminded me of my grandparents."
I stopped at the edge of the driveway and looked at Mandy's house. Dalton was in tune and asked,
"What happened over there?"
"I stuck a hatchet in the top of a guy's head on that porch."
Dalton didn't reply, but started walking towards the house.
I followed him around the little fence that separated the two houses. The yards were overgrown, the grass up to our knees. It was obvious no one had been here in a long time. We stopped at the edge of the porch, where the blood stain was still quite visible, though now it was just a large black stain that could have been caused by anything. I looked at the front door and said,
"In the bedroom back there. I shot his partner in the face. He was trying to rape a young woman. She had two little kids they'd locked in a closet."
I stepped up onto the porch and paused at the open door and looked in. Closing my eyes briefly, I could hear the flick of the Zippo and smell the cigarette as it caught. The couch I'd slept on was still there, though it looked much worse for wear now. The house was littered with the possessions of one's life. All the things we accumulate during our time on this planet, scattered and, in many cases, broken. We walked through the house, stepping over and around things that had been inspected and discarded as either useless or not worth the effort to whoever had come through here. I wondered how many people had been through the place since I left it. I didn't go into the bedroom, but I stopped at the door and looked in. The room had a musty smell of mold that assaulted the nose. The wall was covered in black mold in the same pattern brains and blood had left. Dalton looked over my shoulder into the room. It was obvious to him what had happened.
"Well played," he said, as he stepped back.
We went outside and stepped through a hole in the fence. Someone had pushed it down instead of walking around it. The door to Edith and James's house was open as well. Dirt, leaves, and other detritus blown in by wind or carried in by both man and beast littered the once tidy entry. I pushed the door open fully, the hinges squeaking audibly as I did. The house was dark and dank. Unlike Mandy's house, with its numerous windows, there were few openings for natural light. I clicked on my flashlight and used it to guide my way into the house. Here, too, was more evidence of people, many people, having been through the house. I bypassed the living room and went straight to the kitchen. This was Edith's space. The cabinet doors hung open or were broken off altogether. The oven door hung open slightly, and something there caught my eye. A dish towel hung from the handle. I stepped over to it and touched it. It was stiff and rough. I thought for a moment about taking it. I could clearly see Edith swatting James with it. But I decided to leave it where it was, as a testament to the sweet old woman, though no one would know it but me. I did a quick inspection of the rest of the house, relieved when I found no bodies. "I want to go out and see if James's tractor is still here," I said, as I went out the back door. Here, the yard was like the front, overgrown and weed-choked. I could see into the little shop behind the house, and the tractor was not there.
For some reason, it made me feel better. Thinking there was no way James would leave it behind, and wherever it was, he must be as well. A naive idea, of course, but it made me feel better. I decided I would remember them as I knew them and not allow my mind to go to that dark place.
We better get back before that old geezer out there loses his shit, Dalton said.
I nodded, and we started back around the house. I prefer to think they're all right wherever they are. Dalton stoically replied. Better that way. Sarge was holding court out on the road. Doc came towards us as we approached, asking, Everything all right?
Yeah.
I just wanted to see if these folks were still here. I stayed here when I was walking home. They were really nice people. Doc looked past us to the house and asked, You want me to go see if I can find anything? I shook my head. No. I'd prefer to think they moved on, and not that they were left to rot in that house. Doc stared at the house for a minute before replying, They probably did move on. I gripped Doc's shoulder and nodded. That's what I thought, too.
You see everything you needed to? Sarge asked.
I nodded, and he added,
Good. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to get the hell out of this rain and onto the house.
I smiled.
I'm ready.
You know, just this side of Perry is the rest area where I ran into Jess.
Do you need to stop there and take a stroll down memory lane, too? Sarge asked.
I laughed and replied,
We can go as long as your old-ass prostate can hold out.
Get your ass in that truck, Sarge snorted as he turned to go to the Hummer. Slipping the truck into gear, I pulled out behind the old man. We continued towards Perry, and it wasn't long before I saw the rest area. I thought it looked like shit back then, but damn, it was a real mess now. But there were no people. Seeing it again brought a smile to my face. I could see Jess standing there with that look of desperation. I could only imagine what would have happened to her had I not relented and let her go with me, even if she was an annoying little shit at that point. The roadblock into Perry was still there, though it was no longer manned and appeared it hadn't been for a very long time. We had to stop and wait for Mike to drive around us and push some of the cars out of the way with the Striker, something he did with way too much enthusiasm.
Knock that damn caterwauling off, Sarge shouted into the radio.
Sorry, boss, Mike called back, but this is the most fun I've ever had with my clothes on.
That's enough, shithead, Sarge called back. Morgan could drive that truck through there sideways.
Mike did as instructed, kind of. In his own way, he stopped. When the Striker stopped moving, it was sitting on top of a Honda Accord. Mike came back over the radio, laughing.
Stop, boss!
The howls of laughter from him, Ted, and even Doc, I think, were clearly heard. I could just see Sarge's head hanging as he asked, Why me, Lord? Mike's handiwork had drawn a few people out to see what all the noise was. They stood in the rain, taking in the show. As I rolled past them, I waved, and a young woman under a broken umbrella smiled and waved back. We didn't see anyone else as we passed through, but Perry looked as though it were inhabited. The Walmart parking lot still had the remnants of the relief efforts from back then. The big military tents were still there, a couple of them. Connex containers sat with their doors open, rusting in the rain. In rapid succession, we passed the spot on the side of the road where Thad was camped when we came across him. The little lake where Thad had his snake encounter, which brought a smile to my face. And then the little patch of woods that led to the unfortunate encounter where Jess nearly shot my head off. It was a stark reminder of just how long it took me to walk this far. Days and days on the road. And this wasn't even halfway yet. There were so many days yet to come when I had made it this far. And yet, here we were in mere hours.
As we passed through Cross City, I picked up my radio and called.
Hey, Sarge, you want to stop by your house?
No, no reason. Nothing left there.
Ah, come on, Mike replied. Let's stop by for old time's sake.
No, Sarge replied.
You never let us have any fun, Mike replied.
Mikey, kids are meant to be seen, not heard, Sarge said.
But you can't see me.
Exactly. And I shouldn't hear your prepubescent ass either.
Prepubescent? Mike asked.
Look it up, Einstein.
We continued on our path in the constant rain, both a hazard and a comfort. As we passed through Chiefland, I looked for signs of people. Much like in Altoona and Umatilla, I saw what must be the local market. But the soggy tables and tarps covering them sat empty. There'd been other signs of life. In a couple of places, I saw crops planted, and some that looked as though they were either in the process of or had already been harvested. It was heartening to see. Life does indeed go on. We took Highway 27 out of Chiefland towards Williston, which would eventually take us to Ocala. From there, I imagine the old man would take Highway 40 through the forest to Highway 19 and home. It was nearly the exact same route I had taken home, and again, I was struck by the difference. We'd be home today. It took me nearly a month to make the same trip. I started to think of all the differences. Like the day, everything changed. I just left a drive-thru where I grabbed a burger and a Coke. A burger that contained probably 40 or 50 cows, maybe more. And a Coke, which I do dearly love, made with shit no one should put in their bodies. Though I and millions of others did it daily. I was riding in a car at 75 miles an hour. Just the thought of what it took to make that happen could vapor lock your brain if you really got into it. And not just everything it took to build the car, but the fuel, the road, the GPS system used for navigation, millions upon millions of moving parts. But of course, at the moment, I was sitting in the cab of a massive truck hauling a load of fuel. So these things certainly weren't gone. But the idea that everyone would again be zipping down the highway would be decades away, if ever. And maybe it wasn't all bad. Life was certainly simpler in some ways, and immensely harder in others. You didn't have to worry about taxes or light bills, but you had to worry about how to produce light. Budgeting for the grocery bill wasn't so much of a problem, but coming up with food was, and in most cases, the food we now ate was far better for us. It was certainly organic and free of pesticides and chemicals, but it took far more effort to produce. Unlike the old world, to put calories in required putting calories out. But then, that's the way the natural system works. We perverted that, making it too easy to input calories. We created calorie-dense foods when at the same time, we were reducing the need to expend them in every facet of life. And that is why we became so unhealthy. Between Williston and Ocala, the rain stopped. And for an instant, the sun peeked through the clouds. I leaned forward to feel it on my face. To look up and see the sun, it made me smile and brought me out of the funk I was wallowing in. It was kind of funny. When the sun was overhead and baking you, you wished for it to abate. For some clouds to move in and offer some relief. But go without it for a day or so, and you longed for its return, knowing full well it was going to make you uncomfortable again.
All right, everyone. Ocala is coming up. And with this break in the rain, things could get western. Keep your eyes open, Sarge called on the radio.
I saw Dalton pop up out of the turret of the Hummer and man the machine gun. This would be the biggest town we drove through. Of course, Tallahassee was bigger, but we never left the interstate. We'd be driving right through the heart of Ocala's south side,
not the best part of town, even in good times. The rain picked back up as we crossed.